It is. This is a presentation that I was fortunate enough to have given in Pune. And it was Lord Nityananda's appearance day. And there were about, 800 to 1,000 people in the temple. They have a small temple room, but they have a big, huge hall. And you sit up on this stage and you speak from a big vyasasan. The only reason I didn't record it was because it was being translated into Marathi. And so this is the first time that I've been able to give it in English, so I'm just making a little recording for the membership section of the website. But Nityananda, of course, is the brother of Lord Chaitanya, and in another pastime, he's none other than Balaram. In Chaitanya Lila, Nitya means eternal, and Ananda means bliss. So Nityananda's name means the bliss of eternity. And in Krishna Lila, Balarama, actually Rama can mean bliss, it can also mean strength, and Bala means strength. So assuming that Bala takes care of the strength part of it, let's say that the Rama means bliss. So then that would refer to the bliss of spiritual strength or spiritual power. So if we really look into it, it's very fascinating who Balaram is and the part he played in Lord Chaitanya's Lila. Goda Desh, Desh means state or country, and Goda means the state of Bengal, and that's where Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda appeared over 500 years ago. And the predictions in Bengali about their appearance are to this effect, that in the state of Bengal, the sun and the moon will arise simultaneously. We don't see that in nature. It's either the moon or the sun, and we don't see them both coming up. One's coming up, the other one's going down, and vice versa. And they both shed light. You know, the sun, we were just talking about daylight savings time and its advantages. Obviously, we couldn't subsist without the sun. But the moon also, the light of the moon is very powerful. It gives vitality to the vegetables. And people that know how to plant their vegetables according to the tides, which are themselves are governed by the waxing and waning of the moon, get much better results with their vegetables. So moonlight is also considered very, very soothing and calming. So being in the fire of material existence, the moon-like rays that come from Lord Chaitanya are very peaceful and very calming. So Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda are like two luminaries, and they're both arising simultaneously in the province of Bengal. Their purpose, of course, is to propagate the Sankirtan movement. Lord Nityananda, you always see him in blue. Here, apparently, Lord Chaitanya is in an uncharacteristic purple color. That's probably before he took sannyas. In fact, it's definitely before he took sannyas because you can see his hair here. Once he took sannyas, he shaved off all of his beautiful hair. And then, who are the other members that are flanking them, Lisa? The other members of the Panchatattva? Shivas, Advaita, and Gadadhar. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Shivas Adigaur Bhaktivinoda. So Krishnadas Kaviraj is the biography of Lord Chaitanya's later life, and he wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita. The earlier life of Lord Chaitanya is chronicled in a book called the Chaitanya Bhagavat. But, of course, the later life of Lord Chaitanya is of more interest and more importance for the devotees. And that is chronicled by Krishnadas Kaviraj. And how that came to be, how he came to be the author of that, is interesting. Because where Krishnadas Kaviraj lived with his brother, a great devotee of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda came to visit in their home. And his name was Sri Miketana Ramdas. And he was a great devotee of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. But Krishnadas Kaviraj's brother, I think his name was Guruvan Mishra, he had devotion for Lord Chaitanya, but he disregarded Lord Nityananda. He didn't consider it was important to have regard for Lord Nityananda. And there began an argument between, and this Srinikatan Ramdas, he left the house in anger at the disregard for Lord Nityananda. And Krishnadas himself was also quite upset by his brother's slighting, or it wasn't his brother, but it was someone who was visiting in the brother's house, by the slight of Lord Nityananda. And he went to bed that night with a disturbed mind, And lo and behold, as you see in this picture, Lord Nityananda appeared to Krishna's Kaviraj in a dream and told him to go to Vrindavan, leave your brother's house because there had been defilement there. And his brother sort of sided with the local person who disregarded Nityananda. So Krishnadas was already feeling like he shouldn't live any longer in his brother's house anyway. And Lord Nityananda indeed said, just go. And he went. He went to Vrindavan. And I'm not sure at what age he was, because he'd written many books in his earlier life. But when the devotees approached him to write the biography of Lord Chaitanya, he was very, very old, and he was blind and extremely feeble. And although he'd been a writer in his earlier age, he didn't feel like he had the physical capabilities to undertake this great biography of Lord Chaitanya. And the devotees who wanted him to do it saw him as qualified really based on works he'd done 20 years before and nothing contemporary. And so Krishnadas went into the temple where the Madan Mohan deity was installed, and he said, Lord, if you want, anyone can do this. A lame man can cross mountains, a blind man can see stars in the sky, and a dumb man can speak poetry. That's actually a verse. Pangung langayatiya giram yat kripatama mandaya. And I believe what happened was the garland from the deity fell at the feet of Krishnadas, and he took that as a sign of assent. So he was going to write the story of Lord Chaitanya in the Chaitanya Charanamrita, and that becomes also the story of Lord Nityananda. And Lord Nityananda was famous for dancing. Wherever Lord Chaitanya would organize his kirtan parties, he would appoint some people to play the madanga, some people to play the kartals, some people to sing, and some people to dance. And of all the dancers, Lord Nityananda was the best dancers. These two brothers, I told you, like one body, they are identical manifestations. If you do not believe in Lord Nityananda, you will fall down. This is what was said. And it was called to mind to Krishnadas Kaviraj in connection with this offender, this person who was disregarding Lord Nityananda, the ancient story of Romaharshana Sutta. Romaharshana Sutta means son. So Romaharshana was the son of Romaharshana Sutta was the son of Romaharshana. And Romaharshana was the head of the great assembly of sages. He had many, many qualifications. But when Lord Balaram came and he was on pilgrimage throughout India, this is ruining the recording, by the way. It's probably because of the extra light. You know, they're not ready to go to sleep yet. So Lord Balaram came on yatra to this very assembly of sages. And remember, Lord Balaram is none other than Nityananda in a previous life. And what happened was all the sages stood up to give respect to Lord Balaram, except Romaharshana. He considered that Balaram, being a Kshatriya, was inferior to him, and he was a Brahmin. And he disregarded him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that was a great offense. And as such, Lord Balaram deemed him unqualified to be the head of the sages. And so he wanted to give him liberation, undeserved liberation. So Lord Balaram picked up a blade of kusa grass and threw it with such velocity that it pierced the heart of Romaharshana Sutta. Romaharshana, he fell down dead and got liberation. And then his son was appointed the head of the sages. So it's not a very, very good policy. Even if you're a devoted worshiper of Krishna and you're a devoted worshiper of Lord Chaitanya, still you could be ruined if you don't also include Lord Nityananda. And in fact, this whole series just broadens one's horizons. Everyone tends to be denominational. We tend to be egocentric and we tend to be egotistical. And we judge everything from our own, you know, pinpointed point of view. And we need to be reminded of the importance of Ekadasi, of the importance of Tulsi Devi, of the importance. It's all important. There isn't, you know, you can't just say, well, Chaitanya is important, Nityananda is not important. I think that's what we learn, and I'm learning by doing these shows, you know. There's so many things that are part of being a denizen of the spiritual world. I mean, it's a really mundane comparison, but if you've grown up in Spanish Fork, there are just certain things that you're aware of. You know? there's Payson High School, and they're the green, and there's Spanish Fork Dons, and the red, and there's the fact they don't get along that well together, and then there's Macy's, which has been here forever, and Shopko, which is more recent, and you just sort of, you know, you're just sort of aware of all these things, and that's what makes you a resident of Spanish Fork. So the residents of the spiritual world, they're aware of certain things, a number of different things, and to be unaware of some of these things, or intentionally not verse or school oneself in, say, someone like Nityananda, is to basically disqualify oneself from returning to the spiritual world, because these are how the denizens of the spiritual world are known. Oh yes, Lord Nityananda, Lord Titan, and so on and so forth. So it's an expansion of the consciousness. Man-made religion is always funneling and narrowing and making sectarian. But when you actually come to awakening your relationship with God, you're always learning more, you're always broadening more and more and more. And so Lord Nityananda is not an insignificant personality, and we're going to find that out right now in this slide here. He is none other than Balaram, and Balaram is the origin of Mahavishnu. Krishna's first expansion is Balaram, a portion of whom is manifested as Sankarshan, who then expands as Pradyumna. So Pradyumna, actually from Pradyumna comes Mahavishnu, and from Mahavishnu comes all the material universes. So what that means is the material universes come from Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu is a portion of Pradyumna, who's a portion of Sankarshana, who's a portion of Balaram. So how powerful is Balaram and Lord Nityananda? Balaram and Nityananda are so powerful that a portion of a portion of a portion of them creates the entire material universes. So not something to disregard. So as I mentioned before, Rama can mean Nityananda. In other words, when we chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, that can refer to Sri Ramachandra, it can refer to Balaram, and it can also refer to Nityananda as well. Just like Chaitanya can also refer to Krishna himself. So Lord Nityananda's role vis-a-vis Lord Chaitanya was very, very interesting. He is the protector of the devotees of the Lord. Being very, very strong and very, very powerful and quite passionate, he puts it upon himself to look out for the devotees, and especially Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in many instances, he's in a very, very protective, guarded mood for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya often went into ecstasy and trance, and so Lord Nityananda, when that happened, Lord Nityananda was his eyes and ears and provided some stability for him. And Lord Nityananda also is the original spiritual master. All the spiritual masters are considered to be representatives of Lord Nityananda. In spite of, you know, you've heard the cliche, he's a big guy, but he has a heart of gold, you know. So Lord Nityananda is very strong, very tough. He can be quite lethal, as Roma Harshana found out. But actually, he wants everyone to come to Lord Chaitanya. He knows the innermost desire of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Krishna, which is to retrieve all souls back to home, back to Godhead, so that Krishna can love them. And so in that mood of trying to facilitate his brother's desires, he actually has this incredibly soft side, where he'll protect Lord Chaitanya on the one hand, but rather than keeping people away, what he'll do is he'll instruct them how, if they're not qualified to approach Lord Chaitanya at the moment, they will become qualified to approach him in the future. So he's not just someone who pushes people away. He's not just like a bodyguard in the material world. He assesses their qualifications to associate with Lord Chaitanya, and if they're lacking, then he instructs them as the spiritual master from within. He also appears as the spiritual master without, in order to make them qualified so that in the very near future they can associate with Lord Chaitanya. Therefore, he's the mercy incarnation. Have you ever wondered why we refer to Prabhupada by this long title, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada? I used to wonder about that until someone explained to me that the His Divine Grace means that he is the mercy personified of God. The mercy personified of Lord Chaitanya is Nityananda, and the spiritual master is a representative of Nityananda. So therefore, the spiritual master is in fact His divine grace. The grace of God approaches us in the form of the spiritual master, and that's why the spiritual master can be called His divine grace, and it's just not an inflated title. It actually has significance, and it's indicative of His humility. So there are five levels of pleasure that we experience depending upon what level of consciousness or what ladder of the evolutionary scale we're on. On the most basic level, anamoya means consciousness of grains is the absolute truth. Just like the lamas, if they get grains, that's God realization for them. That's as good as it gets. You could read Bhagavad Gita them all day long and they wouldn't understand it and they wouldn't care. So that's the for those on the lower rungs of the evolutionary ladder, grains are the absolute truth. And they're just thinking about grains, meditating on grains, and if they get grains, they're happy. And that's it. A little higher is called pranamoya, where you begin to distinguish between life forms. It's like a child, like maybe Aram, you know. Initially, they want everything to be in their mouth. You know, everything's experienced in their mouth. When they grow up a little bit, they realize it's not all about them. It's not all about them. And whereas before they would have refused to share things with their little playmates, they may start to acknowledge some sentiency and some validity in the context of their associates and start to share things with them. And that's called pranamaya, the beginnings of selflessness, and a higher level of pleasure is accessed. And then jnanamaya means that other people think and feel, and you can hurt them not only physically, but you can hurt them verbally also by being disregardful of them or disrespectful of them. And so with the recognition of the faculties of thinking, feeling, and willing in other living beings, one then again comes to a higher level of consciousness, more sensitivity, and the more sensitivity one has, then the more possibility of happiness there is. And then vijnanamaya means to not only recognize the physicality, breathing and mobility and vision and the sensual activities of the living beings, not only to recognize the mental faculties, the consciousness of the living being, but also to recognize that within the physical and the mental forms is the eternal spirit soul. And that's the realization of vijnanamaya. Vijnana means applied knowledge, to see that regardless of what body living beings have, whether it be animal or vegetable or mineral or reptile, that inside of each and every body is an eternal spirit soul. And so that is a higher yet form of consciousness. And people that are on that level feel much, much more transcendental happiness than, say, the animals who can't see beyond grains. But the highest level of bliss is called ananda moya. And that comes by realizing that God is a person, that I have a relationship with Him, that He created me to love Him, and then to awaken that loving relationship with Him. And that's the highest, to have a personal, reciprocal relationship with God. And that's what Lord Nityananda does. In fact, that's why He's named Nityananda, because you can't have Ananda only by realizing that every living being is a spirit soul, only by recognizing their mental or physical faculty. You can only have Ananda when you're engaged in a relationship with the Lord. And it's Lord Nityananda who, like, puts you together. He makes the fits, you see. If there's something that's not going to work, He'll work on you as the spiritual master. And if you take discipleship seriously under His guidance, then He will actually qualify you for being into a relationship with the Supreme Lord. So again, the power of Lord Nityananda, it is not possible for us to imagine the breathing power of Mahavishnu, who is but a partial manifestation of Lord Nityananda. Why does it mention the breathing power of Mahavishnu? Because when He breathes, all the universes come from His breathing and from the pores of His body. And initially, when the universes emanate from Him, it's explained they're very tiny. They're just like little golden eggs, three times the size of an atom. Just like all of us, when our fathers and mothers got together and they conceived us 9 months before our birth, we were probably that minuscule ourselves. We were just like few little emotions, you know, sort of mixing together, and then it becomes a little pea-like substance, and it begins to grow throughout the 9 months of gestation. So it's the same sort of a process with the universes themselves. They're very small, but they begin to grow, just like the child grows within the womb of its mother. This is the name of the birthplace of Lord Nityananda. He wasn't physically the brother of Lord Chaitanya. He didn't physically appear in the same family. He appeared in a distant place, but as soon as they met each other, they recognized that, in fact, they are the eternal associates and none other than Krishna and Balaram. Even in Krishna pastime, although they had the same father, they had different mothers. Devaki was the mother of Krishna and Rohini was the mother of Balaram. So this is Eka Chakra, and when his father was a pandit named Hadai Pandit, and when Lord Nityananda was a young boy, he found a deity of Krishna floating in the river right there. He was a great devotee throughout his whole life, even from childhood. He fished the deity out of the water, and there is still a temple there. That's the main temple in the village now, dedicated to Bunkum Roy, and the deity is still being worshipped there. As I said before, anyone desiring to become expert in the service of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna should always aspire to be under the guidance of Swarup Damodar Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, and Raghunath Goswami. To come under the protection of the Goswamis, one must get the mercy and grace of Nityananda Prabhu. So these are all bona fide gurus, all the Goswamis, and Lord Nityananda is the facilitator. He's the one that puts one with one's spiritual master and spiritual instructor. So he's like a bodyguard, he's like a protector, but his job is not to keep you out, but it's to get you in. It's not his job so much, it's just the temperament of his heart. It's just the nature of his heart. One time, Lord Nityananda, when all the devotees were traveling to see Lord Chaitanya in Jagannath Puri, they would preach in Bengal. After Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, he made his headquarters in Puri, because a sannyasi has to kind of leave his birthplace, you know. But he chose Puri so that his mother could get news of him from time to time, and so that the devotees could come and see him once a year. So it was like a 3 or 4 or 5 day trip, and they would all gather, and Shivananda Sen was the one that would organize the supplies and the logistics of it all. And one time, there was some breakdown in communications, and they hadn't eaten. They missed a meal. And so Lord Nityananda was like getting angry and angry and angry and angry. And then he went up to Shivananda Sen, and he was so hungry and angry that he kicked him. He kicked him like that. And Shivananda Sen, after having been kicked by Lord Nityananda, instead of being angry, he started dancing in ecstasy. And this is what his reaction was. He said, "Today you've accepted me as your servant and have properly punished me for my offense. The dust of your lotus feet is not attainable even by Lord Brahma, yet your lotus feet have touched my wretched body." So what he thought was, as long as Lord Nityananda was being nice and polite to him, he wasn't really accepting him as his servant. See what I'm saying? So when Lord Nityananda kicked him and punished him, then he felt validated as a servant of Lord Nityananda. And then, of course, when you get kicked, you get the dust of the lotus feet of the great soul on your body. And so Lord Shivananda Sen reacted in a totally unexpected way than most people would if they were kicked by someone. And it says here further, "The dust and shade of the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas have been granted to this fallen soul by the mercy of Lord Nityananda." So that meant when he got the dust of Lord Nityananda, and when Lord Nityananda accepted him as a servant, then he knew that he was going to get the mercy of all the other Vaishnavas. Kind of like that one thing, that once you get in the door there, then everything else just kind of falls into place. So if you focus on getting the mercy of Lord Nityananda, then through Lord Nityananda, you can get the mercy of all the other Vaishnavas. In the beginning, one should very regularly chant Sri Gaurasundara's holy name, and then chant the holy name of Lord Nityananda. Thus, one's heart will be cleansed of impure desires for material enjoyment. Then one can approach Vrindavan to worship Lord Krishna. I wonder if I turn this light off, does it make any difference at all? Unless one is favored by Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda, there is no need to go to Vrindavan. For unless one's mind is purified, he cannot see Vrindavan, even if he goes there. So that's what we do, you know, when we chant Hare Krishna and we finish around, we go Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivas Adi Gaur Bhaktivinoda, to invoke the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. Otherwise, there's a saying by Narottam Das Thakur. He says, you cannot go to Vrindavan just by buying a ticket. That you have to have a certain state of heart that then approaching Vrindavan, you can see the real Vrindavan, the Vrindavan that's beloved of Krishna, and the inhabitants of Vrindavan who are destined to go to the spiritual world. Transcendental Vrindavan is not appreciated by those who are not devotees or self-realized souls, because this Vrindavan Dham is all spiritual. Chintamani pakara sadmashu kalpa vriksha laksha vrita shusharabhi vya palyantam lakshmi saha sadasam brahma sevyamanam govindamari purusham tamaham vidami. Both the Vrindavan in the spiritual world and the Vrindavan which is at present in India. And if you go to Vrindavan, you have to have spiritual vision. More and more so. I mean, the first time I went to Vrindavan in 1973, it had a lot of, you know, what you might call rustic, idyllic charm. There were no motor cars. There were lots of trees and lots of forests, and it was quiet and peaceful, and you hear the chanting. But over the last 30 years, just so many people have moved out from Delhi. There are housing complexes now. There are condominiums. There are gated communities with satellites. There's motor cars everywhere. And if you think it was hard in 1973 to see through the dust and the dirt of Vrindavan, to see it as non-different from Krishna's abode, now it's like you really have to have purity of heart. You really have to have transcendental vision, because there's a lot of stuff that you just can't sort of compute unless you have a certain special vision or a certain special mentality. But in fact, Prabhupada saw the Vrindavan in the material world as non-different than the Vrindavan in the spiritual world. He said that both places, Chintamani Pakarashut, are made of Chintamani, which is like touchstone. The trees are desire trees. The trees will yield anything that you desire in the service of Krishna. So even those trees in present-day Vrindavan, if you sincerely want to serve Krishna and you pray for something from the tree, you'll get it, even today. Problem is, people don't pray to the tree for something to serve Krishna. They want to use it for their own selves. And it won't react to those kind of a self-centered request. And Sarabhya Bipalyantam, there are cows there yielding all desires. Just like the trees can give you anything you want, the cows in Vrindavan will also give you all you want. And Lakshmi Sahas Sat Sat Brahma Sevyamanam, the Lord is surrounded by hundreds of thousands of Lakshmis, or goddess of fortune, who cannot leave His side even for a moment. So Lord Chaitanya wanted so badly to go to Vrindavan. He was just always talking about going to Vrindavan, going to Vrindavan, going to Vrindavan. And one day, Lord Chaitanya just said, I'm going to Vrindavan. He said, I'm just going to Vrindavan. It was like 1,500 miles away. There were toll roads. There were Muslims. There were bandits. And Lord Nityananda just didn't think this was a good time and a good plan. And it was just so impulsive that Lord Chaitanya just started with nothing and just walking to Vrindavan. And so what Lord Nityananda did in his mood of protecting Lord Chaitanya, when they came to a river, Lord Nityananda said, we've arrived. This is like after 3 hours, you know. Lord Chaitanya was sort of in a state of ecstatic love. So Lord Nityananda fooled Lord Chaitanya. He pointed to what in fact was the Ganges River, and he said it's the Yamuna River. And the Yamuna River runs 1,000 miles away near Vrindavan. So he said, now, he says, we've arrived in Vrindavan. Now we've got a place for you to rest and have something to eat. And what he did was he took him to Advaita Acharya's house, which was in Santipur, not too far from Navadvip in Bengal. And when Lord Chaitanya realized that he'd been tricked, he wasn't really angry. This was right after he'd taken sannyas. Right after he took sannyas, he was just in that mood, I'm going to go to Vrindavan. But Nityananda wanted Lord Chaitanya to have at least one final meeting with his mother, Satchimata. He knew she'd be heartbroken, and he knew that she would literally die if he were to make his headquarters 1,500 miles away. And so Lord Nityananda, looking after Lord Chaitanya and taking all these things into consideration, he exhibited some transcendental trickery. And he tricked Lord Chaitanya into just stopping at Vaidyacharya's house, having a meal, and then he sent, please bring Mother Sachi, please bring Lord Chaitanya's mother here. And so she saw him without his hair, and she wept, and they embraced, and he apologized. He apologized. He said, if I'd been on my right mind, I would have never done this to you, just very tactfully. And then he said, what can I do to make it up for you? And the sannyasi cannot live at home. He has to leave home. And so it was discussed back and forth, and then finally agreed that he would go to Jagannath Puri, which is within a few days' travel, and then she would get a word from him from time to time. But that was all orchestrated by Lord Nityananda in his mood of a protector and a bodyguard of Lord Chaitanya. Now, Nityananda and Advaita had an interesting relationship. I mean, they were always insulting each other. And on one level, it was like they didn't like each other at all. But remember, there are two aspects of the God, and one of the things about the spiritual world is just brilliant dialogue, just brilliant, sparkling dialogue. This is God with unlimited intellect, and so they'll use a word which apparently may be insulting, but actually it's a very, very great, praise. It seems like they're insulting, but they're actually praising them. So Nityananda and Advaita used to go at each other all the time, and if you were just a casual spectator, you would think that they really didn't like each other. And so here are some of the things that on this occasion when Nityananda had diverted Lord Chaitanya and then Advaitacharya was feeding them, Nityananda was complaining about the food, that there's not enough food, I'm hungry, I want more, 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 more. And so then Advaitacharya would retort and he'd say, you are a mendicant traveling on pilgrimage. Sometimes you eat fruits and roots and sometimes you simply go on fasting. I am a poor Brahmin and you come to my home. Please be satisfied with whatever little food you have received and give up your greedy mentality. So Advaita saying, you know, you're supposed to be, you know, you eat on roots and earth. What is this? You know, coming and putting fistful after fistful of food in your mouth and then asking for more. You know, you're supposed to be satisfied with whatever, you know, stuff you find in the jungle, you know. And then, so give up your greedy mentality. And then Lord Nityananda says, whatever I may be, you've invited me. Therefore, you must supply as much as I want to eat. And then Advaita says, as much as you want to eat, he says, you know, the whole village would starve, you know, if we wanted to give you as much as you want to eat. Like that. And then Nityananda says, my belly is not please filled up. Please take away your food. I have not taken the least of it. And then he started to throw the food. He started to throw it around. He was like an avaduta, like a madman. And when some of the particles of rice touched the body of Advaitacharya, he thought himself purified by the touch of remnants of food thrown by him, and he began dancing. So very, very sweet and complicated and difficult to understand the intimacy that existed between Lord Nityananda and Vaidyacharya. This was Raghunath Das Goswami, who came from a very wealthy family, and he tried many times to go and join Lord Chaitanya. From an early childhood, he wanted to join the retinue of Lord Chaitanya, but his parents were incredibly wealthy, and he was the only son. And not only his parents, but his uncles and all. He was the only child of the whole family, and he was counted upon to take over this kingdom, really. They had the control of a seaport, and I forget what the deal was they had with the Muslim, but they were making like millions and millions of lakhs of rupees every year, and it was all going to be administered by Raghunath Das Goswami. But he, from an early age, wanted just to go run away and join Lord Chaitanya. But every time he ran away, he would get caught and he would get brought back. And so pretty soon he had bodyguards watching him 24 hours a day because the uncle and the father, you know, knew what he wanted and they were going to foil that at all costs. So finally, after having run away about 5 or 6 times and then got caught and bring up, he asked, how can I get away? And they said, you have to go and get the mercy of Lord Nityananda. You go see Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda was at that time in Bengal nearby. And they said, if Lord Nityananda gives you permission, then you will get the association of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So when Raghunath Das Goswami first saw Lord Nityananda, he just bowed down and he said these words. He said, although I am unfit and greatly afraid to submit this plea, I nevertheless request you, sir, to be especially merciful towards me by granting me shelter at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he described himself as a dwarf who wants the moon. And Lord Nityananda has said, you are a thief. Lord Nityananda is very outspoken. And he said, you are a thief. That's why you haven't got the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, because you're sinful, you're a thief. And what did he mean by that? He meant that all those times Raghunath tried to run away and go to Lord Chaitanya, he didn't go through Lord Nityananda. He didn't get the permission of Lord Nityananda. He was trying to steal. So Lord Nityananda said, you're trying to, Chaitanya is my property, he's my brother, and you're trying to steal him without going through me. That's why you weren't successful. So he called him a thief, jokingly. And then because he called him a thief, he said, come here, and he put his foot on the head of Raghunath. And normally, the foot is the lowest part of your body, the head is the highest part. It's a great insult if you put your foot on someone else's upper part of their body. But in this case, Lord Nityananda was giving a hint. Even though he was calling him a thief, and this was his punishment to put his foot on his head, he was giving a hint that actually his mercy was forthcoming. So he told Raghunath, he said, you can atone for this criminal mentality of yours by spending some of your money to create a big feast for all the devotees in Bengal at that time. And then Raghunath Das Goswami, he was very happy to get this indication, and he went around and he bought many tons and tons of rice and cooked food, and it's prepared in a special way. We're going to see some pictures. And this, even to this day, 500 years later, this is a huge festival. It's called the Chip Rice Festival in Bengal. And it's still celebrated. And when Lord Nityananda inspired Raghunath Das Goswami to observe the first Chip Rice Festival, literally thousands and thousands of people came. The Brahmins and the villagers and all the food that he bought, you know, and had cooked got eaten up. And then he would go out and he was spending lakhs and lakhs of rupees. He'd buy more and it would get eaten up. And the banks were just filled up with people laughing and chanting and eating. And Lord Nityananda was just having such a great time. And then, I forget who it was, I think it's in the next slide, he was supposed to go to lunch at someone's house. I think his name is in the next slide. Anyway, it'll come up. Someone came and said, what are you doing? You know, what are you doing? Feasting on the bank of the Ganges with tens of thousands of people. You're supposed to, I'm my wife and I, we just cook lunch for you. He said, what are you doing? You know, you'll come to our house and you won't want to eat anything. And then this is what Lord Nityananda said to him. I belong to a community of cowherd boys, and therefore I generally have many cowherd associates with me. I am happy when we eat together in a picnic like this by the sandy bank of the river. So this is in the mood of Balaram, because Krishna and Balaram, they used to take the cows out every day with all their associates, and they used to do this every day. They used to do just this every day. So Lord Nityananda was telling, don't be angry at me. This is so dear to my heart. You know, this is what I did. You know, this is what I'm doing in my past lifetime. So don't mind. You know, I'll come and I'll have a good appetite. But in the meantime, why don't you come and have a few pots and sit with us and have a few pots. And here is what the pots look like. Very, very sumptuous. One is chipped rice with condensed milk. And the other is chipped rice with yogurt. And you see all the fruits and grains and everything. And it was all offered in clay earthen pots. And everyone got three. I think they got three different varieties in front of them. And in the Western countries, our Atlanta temple in Georgia, they have this grand Chip Rice Festival every year. And hundreds and hundreds of people come. Generally, Jayapataka Maharaj, wherever he is in the world, he'll come and attend the Chip Rice Festival in Atlanta, Georgia. So Lord Nityananda sat on the raised platform while everyone was feasting around him. And while as everyone else had three pots, he had seven pots. And then he was going to go to someone else's house for lunch later on. And this is the tree. This is the tree under which they had the Chip Rice Festival. And then Then Lord Nityananda thought it would be nice if Lord Chaitanya came to the festival. Lord Chaitanya was hundreds of miles away. But in his mind, Lord Nityananda called Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya appeared. Not everyone could see him, but he appeared, and he was visible, Lord Nityananda. And Lord Nityananda was feeding Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya was feeding Lord Nityananda, and people were mystified. They said, what's going on? It just seemed like another symptom of madness. He was putting the food somewhere, but the food was disappearing, but they couldn't see anyone there taking it, you know? And that was because Raghunath wanted the association of Lord Chaitanya. So Nityananda called him a thief. He said, you can atone by doing this and all. And then he brought Lord Chaitanya. And this is the theme that we've been pursuing since the beginning of this slideshow, that you have to get the mercy of Lord Nityananda in order to get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So Lord Chaitanya arrived, and then Lord Nityananda went around to each and every pot, took a morsel of chip rice, and pushed it into the mouth of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as a joke. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, also smiling, took a morsel of food, and then he pushed it into the mouth of Nityananda and laughed as he made Lord Nityananda eat it. And all the Vaishnavas were chanting the holy names, Hari, Hari, and eating, and they remembered how Krishna and Balaram ate with their companions, the cowherd boys, on the bank of the Yamuna. This is what Krishna and Balaram would do every single day in Krishna Lila, the very self same thing. This is the fellow, Raghava Pandit. He was cooking for the Lord in his home at the same time, and when he came, say, come on, you know, you got to go to lunch, Lord Nityananda said, I'm enjoying so much, you please just sit down and have two pots of rice yourself. And so he delivered a couple of pots of rice to, what's his name, Raghava Pandit, right? Yeah, Raghava Pandit. And then Raghunath Das, this is a picture of Raghunath Das now, he said, no one can attain the shelter of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu without your mercy. But if you are merciful, even the lowest of men can attain shelter at his lotus feet. So on the one hand, it seems like a deterrent that you have to go through Lord Nityananda. But at the same time, Lord Nityananda is so soft-hearted that he'll qualify anybody, no matter how unqualified they are. He'll qualify them. And then Nityananda, he called Raghunath Das forward, and he said to all the devotees, he said, Raghunath Das's standard of material happiness is equal to that of Indra, the king of heaven. And it was true. He was worth millions and millions and millions of dollars. And then Lord Nityananda was saying, just see how all that can be given up in order to attain the greater treasure of the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And having received the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Raghunath Das, although situated in such material happiness, does not like it at all. This is Nityananda again still speaking. Therefore, let every one of you be merciful toward him and give him the benediction that he may very soon attain shelter at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Lord Nityananda is asking all the great Vaishnavas present there to bless Raghunath Das that he'll get shelter at the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then he called Raghunath Das near him and again placed his feet on Raghunath Das's head and spoke. One who experiences the fragrance of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna does not value even the standard of happiness available in Brahmaloka, the topmost planet, and what to speak of heavenly happiness. My dear Raghunath Das, since you arranged the feast on the bank of the Ganges, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came here just to show you his transcendental mercy. We've given this example in the past, that if you want to associate with the Lord, you have to associate with godly, saintly people. You can't associate with ungodly people and then have the qualifications necessary to associate with the Lord. The Lord is like fire, and if you want to mix with fire, you have to become like fire yourself. The Lord is the supreme pure, and if we want to associate with the Lord, we also have to become pure. And how we become pure is associating with other pure people. Whoever we associate with, they're like a mirror. You can tell our own qualities, our own consciousness, by seeing those with whom we surround ourselves. So the question is, do we surround ourselves with swan-like devotees, or do we surround ourselves with mundane people? Wendy just gave 2 weeks' notice at her job because she just couldn't take it anymore, you know. all of the keep up with the Joneses and talking about the RVs and the boats and all the toys and whistles and stuff like that. And on their part, they said, aha, that's proof that she's brainwashed, that she's not interested in the same things that we're interested in. And that's true. She's interested in associating with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, getting the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And according to Lord Nityananda, the first qualification for that is to choose your friends very, very carefully. Choose your associates very, very carefully. Associate with people engaged in the service of the Lord, and then that will purify oneself. Now, here's the most famous example of Lord Nityananda's soft-heartedness, of Lord Nityananda's willingness and ability to deliver even the most fallen. Jagai and Madai, they belonged to a fanatic sect of Hinduism. Mostly Hindus are peaceful and nonviolent. And the Muslims, kind of being aggressive, would always pretty much bully the Hindus and knock them around. But gradually there evolved amongst the Hindu population some zealots who built themselves up with weights, and their idea was they needed to become as cruel as the Muslims in order to try to protect Hindu society. No more of this turning the other cheek stuff. And so they became very aggressive and very vicious and even criminal. And so two such personalities in Navadvip, this is before Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, were Jagai and Madai. And they did every sort of crime in the book. They outdid the Muslims, in fact, in terms of atrocities. And Nityananda and Haridas went around, it was their custom on the orders of Lord Chaitanya, to go to people's doors and to fall through the doorstep and beg them to chant the holy names of the Lord in order to get liberation. And it occurred to Lord Nityananda that whatever great men do, common men will follow in the footsteps. So he thought, rather than just going around to all the common men and ask them to chant Hare Krishna, what if we go to these uncommonly awful criminals? What if we got them to chant? Then it would be such a stir amongst the city that then everybody, if by doing that one thing, then so many other people would chant. And, you know, when people heard this plan of Lord Chaitanya, they said, I don't think that's a good plan. I don't think they're actually exactly candidates for chanting. In fact, they are dangerous, criminal, you know, psychopaths, you know. And Lord Chaitanya said, well, let's try, because he was so merciful. And he approached them on one occasion, and they chased him and Haridas through the streets, threatening bodily harm. And then he went back the next day, and he approached them again. And this time, Jagai and Madai said, we warned you yesterday, and now, you know, now no more warnings. And Jagai took a pot, and he threw it, and it hit Lord Nityananda on the forehead and opened up his forehead, and blood was coming down. Lord Chaitanya heard about this some distance away, and in the mood of Krishna destroying the demons, he invoked his Sudarshan Chakra, and he appeared there on the spot to behead Jagai. And then Nityananda fell down at the feet of Lord Chaitanya and said to Lord Chaitanya, if you kill these two rogues and dacoits and rascals, then you'll have to kill everybody in Kali Yuga, because everybody has some Jagai and Madai in them. And you'll just have to kill everybody. If you start here, there'll be no ending. You'll have to kill everybody. So please, please just hold on a second and let's see if we can't, you know, get these two to retract. And in fact, already Madai, just when he saw Lord Chaitanya, he just bowed down and he surrendered. He just surrendered and he was shedding tears and he asked for forgiveness and so on and so forth. And then Jagai, who had thrown the pot, then he shortly after followed suit. And he had a complete change of heart and he asked Lord Chaitanya to forgive him. And Lord Chaitanya forgave the brothers on one condition. Can you guess what that was? Go and sin no more. Go and same thing like Christ. Go and sin no more. In other words, redemption is almost always available, but we can't abuse it. We need, if we're redeemed, then we need not to do the things that sullied us beforehand. And if you seek redemption and then do the old things and seek redemption and do the old things, then there's no, that's incorrigibility. There'll be no liberation for such a person in this lifetime, because they've almost just taken the mercy of the Lord and just use it to repeatedly wipe their feet on it, wipe their dirty feet on it. You know, if our sins put Christ, if Christ was on the cross because of our sins, and then we keep sinning, then we're just basically nailing him up all over again onto the cross without any regard, see? He'll do that once, but he's not going to do it repeatedly if we're not serious enough to give up our sinful activities. So Lord Chaitanya forgave the brothers on the condition that they sin no more. And in fact, Jagai was so remorseful, and most of the crimes he did in a drunken stupor, and he didn't even remember the women he'd raped, the people he'd killed, the people he'd robbed. He didn't remember them because he was intoxicated most of the time. So he placed himself near the bathing ghat where everyone came to wash their clothes and to congregate, and he piled up a big pile of stones, and he said, "I don't even know whom I've offended. But please, if I've offended you or whoever I've offended, please come and throw a rock at me. Please come and throw a rock at me. I want to some or other atone and show you that I'm genuinely remorseful for those previous activities." Well, no one would step forward and throw a rock at him because people were thinking that a tiger, you know, when you see a dead tiger, you don't want to approach it because you're not quite, you know, you're never quite sure it's really dead, you know. You might approach the tiger and start to kick it or something like that, and then maybe the tiger wasn't really dead, you know. And so that would not be a very safe thing to do. So they heard Jagai, and they saw him, and they heard his words, and it looked genuine, but nobody, he was such an imposing, formidable person, that still no one went up and threw rocks at him. But anyway, he was genuine, and he became a great, great saint and a great follower of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu along with his brothers. And this was what Lord Nityananda's thinking was. I will convert these two men into top-class devotees who will become famous all over the world. I will change the opinion of those who used to bathe in the holy water of the Ganges after they contacted Jagai and Madai. Prabhupada said that. Prabhupada said so many gurus and all have come from India, and they've done miracles, they've produced gold, they produce ashes, or so on and so forth. And he says, I don't do any of those magic tricks. But he said, my miracle is that I've turned hippies into happies. That's my miracle. That nobody thought that the Westerners could ever accept the purificatory path of devotional service. In fact, in India, it's believed that if a Brahmin crosses the ocean, goes to the West, he's no longer a Brahmin. That the Western countries and the Western people are so far removed from civilized Vedic life that in fact not only can a Brahmin not convert them, but a Brahmin himself will be irredeemably polluted if he even visits the Western countries. And so Prabhupada said, this is my miracle, that I have gone to the Western countries and not only have I not been compromised, but now there are thousands and thousands of Westerners who are following the four regular principles and chanting the names of Krishna. So indeed, a miracle. So Nityananda considers his musings here. From now on, they will consider that Jagai and Madai's association is as good as the association of Ganga Devi herself. This was Nityananda's desire. Nityananda's promise can never go in vain. So formerly, these two guys were so black-hearted and so vicious that if people even thought about them or saw them, they would go to the Ganges to get purified. And now they consider that seeing them and associating them is as good as taking bath in the Ganges. So what a turnaround. And that happened because of the supreme desire of Lord Nityananda. There's so many pictures and dioramas in that instance. It's a very, very famous instance. So I think we could stop here. What do you think? Let me see how many more. Okay, let's just move on. We're three-quarters of the way through. Can you stand it? Can you hold up here for another 10 minutes? Get this taken care of here. I don't think there's enough for a part two. So this is another instance here called the Broken Danda instance. Lord Nityananda thought that Lord Chaitanya was beyond custom. And certainly to take sannyas and to carry the danda, the stick of renunciation, is a custom. And Lord Nityananda knew that Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of God, and he doesn't have to follow these customs. But Lord Chaitanya, wanting to set a good example, he always carries danda. And Lord Nityananda was always thinking, why is he carrying the danda for? He's God. He doesn't have to carry a danda. You know, danda is three bamboo sticks wrapped together with saffron cloth, and then there's a two points that come up the top, and it indicates the three points if one dedicates body, word, and mind to the service of the Lord. And in fact, the sannyasi is supposed to carry his danda for 10 years. Then he no longer has to carry it. But he's supposed to carry it for 10 years before he graduates to another level. And so what happened was Lord Chaitanya was in Kamalapur in Orissa. They came to a river called the Danda Bhaga. In fact, Danda Bhaga, Bhaga means division, and Danda means Danda. So the river, after this instance, it actually became known or renamed according to this particular instance. And what Lord Chaitanya did, he gave his danda to Lord Nityananda to watch for him while he took bath. And Lord Nityananda just broke it and threw it in the river. And when Lord Chaitanya came back, he said, "Where's my danda?" And Lord Nityananda lied to him. He said, "I fell on it. I tripped and fell, and it broke into three parts. And so I just threw it away." And Lord Chaitanya, he knew what Nityananda was getting at, you know. And he just pretended to be angry at him. And he said they were coming into Jagannath Puri. They were arriving for the first time after Lord Chaitanya took sannyas. They were going to Puri, where Lord Chaitanya was going to live for 24 years of his life. And they were outside the outskirts of the city. So Lord Chaitanya said, as a punishment, he said, you cannot accompany me. I am going to enter Puri by myself. Neither you nor any of my retinue can accompany me. So he went ahead into Puri. First of all, this is some of the reasoning behind the breaking of the danda. Also, Lord Nityananda rationalized or excused himself for breaking the danda because he said that Lord Chaitanya would be traveling as a sannyasi and he needed his hands free, one of them to carry his pot, his water pot, and the other to chant his rounds. And so he wouldn't be able to carry a danda. And so Lord Nityananda said, "Well, just as well the danda got broken because you don't have enough hands." And then Prabhupada makes the point here that even Lord Chaitanya, who's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, would chant a fixed, in other words, he would have his beads and he would chant a fixed number of rounds on his beads every day. I mean, if he doesn't have to carry a danda, he doesn't have to have beads, he doesn't have to chant because he's God, he doesn't have to do anything. But he does this in order to set an example. So when he had to choose between the danda and the beads, he thought it's more important to have the beads because that's what every common person can do. Whether they're married or not married or student or not, they can all chant on their beads. And so Lord Chaitanya was advised by Lord Nityananda, "You'll need your free hand to chant on your beads." And that's a clear indication that Lord Chaitanya was chanting a fixed number of rounds on his beads every day. Then again, another one who wanted the mercy of Lord Chaitanya was Jiva Goswami, the greatest of all the scholars of the modern age. He was younger than the other Goswamis. In fact, he was the nephew of Rupa and Sanatan, and he came later to Vrindavan. But before he made his pilgrimage to Vrindavan, he also sought the blessings of Lord Nityananda, who told him, "Go soon to Vrindavan. That place has been awarded to your family by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu." In other words, your uncles, Rupa and Sanatan, are already there. So this is like your family heritage. So you might as well just go and join them. And Lord Nityananda did give his blessings for that. And I'm not sure, but I believe Jiva Goswami might have been initiated by Lord Nityananda. I'm not actually sure there. Thus, he went to Bengal in 1512, and some of the other associates of the Lord that were there were Sri Gadadhar Das, Ram Das, Madhava Ghos, Vasudev Ghos, Ramachandra Khan. These were all the many great preaching associates of Lord Chaitanya in Bengal in that year. And another great soul was Narottam Das. These are some lyrics to the song, one of the songs that he wrote. Narottam Das wrote so many songs about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And one of them, and this is about Lord Nityananda here, "Haha Prabhu Nityananda Premananda Sukhi Nita Parakamanam. You're always happy and I am unhappy. Your feet are cooling like moonshine. Remove all fatigue." This is a famous verse about Lord Nityananda that the devotees sing every year at the appearance occasion of Lord Nityananda. And the song goes on, "Sambandha Nahi Jar Bata Janmi Jelo Se Pacho Buri Dure Cha. Life is useless without connection with you. The human form is spoiled. Nityananda means, the name of Lord Nityananda means eternal pleasure. Otherwise, without connecting to Lord Nityananda, one's life is just like that of an untamed animal. And he continues, Nitai nai bulo muke majilo sham sharashuke vidya kuli ki kuribe tar. Anyone who has never uttered the name of Lord Nityananda has simply chased illusory happiness. Learning, good birth, aristocracy, good looks cannot help. Assets of no value unless one has heard of and acknowledged the supreme position of Lord Nityananda. Without connecting with Lord Nityananda, one has accepted so-called false treasures, false assets as real, and ignored the real assets as being false. Nitai koriya habe vraja radha krishna pade daro nitai charan rukani nitai charana satya. Real shelter is Lord Nityananda. If you want the mercy of Krishna, catch the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda. They offer real shelter. And here is a picture of Lord Nityananda with tulsi leaves on his feet and the blue. He's always dressed in blue, and so his anklets are also blue as well. And here again are his lotus feet, and continuing on with the song, Tadaha Sevaka Nitya Doha Kodi Dada Nitya Paya. Who serves becomes eternal, just like iron rod. If you leave iron rod in the fire long enough, it gets hotter, 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 and then it acts just like fire. So when you chant Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda and Hare Krishna Hare Rama, it acts like fire on the iron rod and spiritualizes one. And then finally, this is the last slide. Narottam Das Thakur prays, my dear Lord Nityananda, I am very unhappy, so you please make me happy, and you kindly keep me in a corner of your lotus feet. That is the sum and substance of this song. So when we say the Maha Mantra in the last slide, just think that that Krishna means Lord Chaitanya and Rama means Lord Nityananda, and you cannot worship the one and disregard the other. They're both equally important. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.